关系最新发展，锁定海峡论坛。
欢迎收看美国之音的海峡论坛，我是樊东林。美国参谋长联席会议主席米利将军证实，中国最近进行了一次进入太空轨道的高超音速武器试验，他并以冷战时期的斯普特尼克时刻来形容中共在军事发展上的这项重大突破。在此之前，中国对相关报道予以否认，表示那只是一次对航天器进行的测试。中国拥有高超音速武器系统究竟意味着什么？美国在高超音速武器方面的发展是否已经落后中国？万一美中在台海爆发军事冲突，高超音速导弹能力是不是双方决胜的关键之一呢？海峡论坛今天特别专访一位高超音速武器的专家，前美国国防部负责国防研究与工程的代理副次长，同时也是国防企业协会 NDIA 的新兴技术研究中心 ETI 的执行主任马克·刘易斯博士 Dr. Mark Lewis。
Dr. Lewis, welcome to Voice of America.
Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, the news that China had tested a new nuclear-capable hypersonic missiles was described as a Sputnik moment that surprised the U.S. officials. So how big a deal is this, in your opinion?
So let me start off. If the reports are correct, honestly, it isn't that big a surprise because we've known that China has invested very heavily in this area.China has made no secret about this. They bragged about their investments in hypersonics. They bragged about the missiles that they're building. You can go on YouTube and see videos of their new weapons as well as their testing facilities. So it really isn't that big a surprise. What I think is important, though, is that this test signals a change in what we perceive as Chinese mm-hmm. intentions. So whereas it's often been said that China is mostly concerned aboutcontrolling the geographic area around China, and therefore most of their military developments are aimed in the Indo-Pacific area. Mm-hmm. If these reports are correct, then this weapon is really a global weapon. This is something that can project force anywhere on the planet. And that's a very, very different capability, and I think signals an important change in the Chinese view of military power.
So, Dr. Lewis, you said it should not be a surprise in China.Is bragging about this capability, but why Beijing was so quick to deny this report, insisting that this is only, in fact, the test of a spacecraft?
So, you know, I will tell you, sometimes it's hard to figure out why the Chinese Communist Party does what they do. They see in hypersonics as in other areas, they will tend to play both sides. On the one mm-hmm. hand, they want to project themselves as pursuing only peaceful technologies, but on the other hand, we see displays of hypersonic weapons at their military parades on display for the whole world to see. I do mm-hmm. think that China has a certain degree of national pride in their work in this area, mm-hmm. and I would tell you it's well deserved. They've made some significant advancements in this area, from fundamental science to operational systems. But why they would deny specific military capabilities is anyone's guess.
Okay. And also, we are more familiar with the so-called ICBMs. What's the difference, the main differences between ICBMs and this kind of hypersonic missiles?
So if I can, let me explain a little bit. Hypersonic refers to anything traveling faster than about 5 times the speed of sound. Mm-hmm. So that's roughly about a mile per second. We have been building hypersonic systems, hypersonic vehicles, since the late 1940s. The very first hypersonic systems were sounding rockets that were launched on the top of captured V-2 rockets right after World War II. But when we refer to hypersonic today, it's really shorthand for hypersonic maneuverable systems. So this refers to things that fly very fast in the atmosphere and can use forces in the atmosphere, aerodynamic forces, to control direction, provide extra maneuverability. And that's really the key. So any ICBM will re-enter, fly, you know, launches from a launch platform, flies to high altitude, and then comes back into the atmosphere at hypersonic speeds. But ICBMs traditionally are not very maneuverable. That's important because if you watch where an ICBM launches, you watch its initial trajectory, you have a pretty good idea where it's going. You know where it's going to mm-hmm. be landing. These hypersonic systems, because they have the added dimension of maneuverability, can mm-hmm. now be unpredictable. So whereas they can travel almost as fast as an ICBM, in some cases not quite as fast as an ICBM, but that mm-hmm. maneuverability makes them especially hard to predict what they're doing, what the intentions are, and also makes it a little bit harder to stop.
So in this case, can U.S. missile defense technology handle China's hypersonic capability, or their capability already has rendered U.S. missile defense system obsolete, in your opinion, Dr. Lewis?
So in fact, U.S. missile capability is not intended to defend against China. Right? Our missile defense uh-huh. system is really aimed primarily at rogue states, the North Koreas and the Libyas and the Irans. Mm-hmm. It's not designed to handle a full volley. And the odd thing about that is we're very clear about that. We've told the Russians that. We've told the Chinese that our missile defense capability is not aimed at them. And yet, for some reason, they seem obsessed with this notion that our missile defense capability is somehow going to limit their military capabilities. And that's just not the case.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about U.S. Missile tests. The Pentagon confirmed that U.S. also had conducted 3 tests to advance our hypersonic weapon system, but failed. In a statement, Pentagon spokesman said the booster rocket that failed was not part of the hypersonic program. Should we worry, please?
So we actually should be worried, but we should be worried from the standpoint of we have had an embarrassing number of test failures. And it speaks not to the technology of hypersonics per se. It speaks to our ability to do these tests. I will tip my hat to the Chinese that the number of tests that they have been able to do and their success rate as a result, when you do something repeatedly, when you do something over and over again, you get really good at it. Mm-hmm. In the 1960s, we used to test hypersonic vehicles in the United States all the time. We had an experimental plane called the X-15, which we flew 199 times throughout the 1960s, and we got really good at it. When you stop doing those sorts of tests, you lose the capabilities, you lose the experience, and that's part of the situation that we're seeing. So yes, we need to worry about it. How do we solve this? It's pretty straightforward. We need to get better at it. We need to test more often. Mm-hmm. We need to make it easier for our technology developers to test their systems. Right now, it is so difficult to test in the United States. A lot of our tests are conducted over the Pacific Ocean. There are so many people who can say no, so many people who can stop you from doing your test because of safety concerns, because of scheduling issues. And we really need to get past that. We need to improve our test infrastructure.
And Dr. Lewis, not only China, but Russia also recently announced that it had successfully launched a new Zircon hypersonic missiles from a nuclear submarine. So it seems that China, as well as Russia, they are challenging U.S. dominance in this field. So do you think that we are playing a catch-up in defense technology?
So there definitely is a bit of a catch-up game being played mm-hmm. in the United States. And this is very frustrating because hypersonics is a field that the United States invented. We flew the first hypersonic object in the late 1940s. We did most of the fundamental research, most of the development throughout the 60s, 70s, and the 1980s. And even into the 1990s, most of the firsts in the field were accomplished by American researchers. And so essentially what happened is we took our foot off the gas. We didn't feel a sense of urgency. We had programs that failed and we canceled them when we probably shouldn't have. We had programs that succeeded and we canceled them also and shelved them. And so we created this opportunity. Now I will say China and Russia are two very, have a very, very different, they're very different aspects in their programs. The Russians have been working in hypersonics for many, many years, going back to the Soviet era, going back to the Cold War. And so these are long-term investments that they've made. China has really has come to the game relatively recently. I think they saw an opportunity. They saw that this was an important military technology. Frankly, they read a lot of the papers that were being produced in the United States. They saw the progress that we were making, and they saw an opportunity to not only catch up to us, but in some cases invest, move quickly, and exceed our timelines.
Okay, so Dr. Lewis, the next question is a two-part question. Because you said we canceled and shelved some of the important programs, should United States restart those programs? And are we on the brink of another arms race or space race, China and Russia?
So the reality is the United States already has a very extensive series of programs in place. Each one of the services, now has an active hypersonic activity underway. The U.S. Army, the U.S. Navy, the U.S. Air Force. We have programs in Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, also advancing the state of the art. Other organizations, we stood up a very important office in the United States called the Joint Hypersonic Transition Office. And that's looking across the board at technologies. It's funding work at universities around the country, including a consortium with 70 universities, bringing our best minds to work in hypersonics. So we are, in fact, pursuing this very, very aggressively. The important thing is we can't take our foot off the gas. We need to have this constant sense that we are in a race. It's not a race that we started, but we are in a race. And that gets to your next point. Are we going to ignite an arms race? We're already in an arms race, right? China is obviously racing to deploy these systems. They already have some systems deployed. Same thing with Russia. So whether or not the United States acknowledges it, there is a race underway. It's a race that I would argue we dare not lose. So we've been drawn into this, and we have to succeed.
So you said that we are in ongoing arms race with Russia and China, but the President Biden saying that we are not seeking a cold war with them. So are we in a cold war or not really, in your opinion?
So I don't think, I'm an engineer, I'm not a policy expert. I would argue it's not quite a cold war. However, it's also very clear that if you look at what the Chinese have done across the board in their investments, they have systematically examined the way the United States fights wars. And they've had a lot of time to do that. So, you know, I'll take you back to the days of the Gulf War. It was almost 30 years ago when the United States unleashed our capabilities in the Gulf. And it was an amazing display of technology, highlighting especially stealth technology. So we had airplanes that were invisible to radar. Mm-hmm. Also, precision-guided weaponry. So we could very, very precisely hit a target with minimal collateral damage. The rest of the world watched that, and they saw our capabilities, and especially Russia, and especially China. So they learned those lessons, and they have been investing to build their own capabilities and also to counter our capabilities. Another area that the United States is very, very much invested in, it's our use of space. We use satellites for imagery, for communications, for navigation, and the rest of the world has seen that. So countries like China especially have looked at ways that they could hold our space capabilities at risk. Now, want to describe it as a Cold War? Not yet. I wouldn't say it's a Cold War because when we think about the Cold War, we think about Russia and the United States with all those nuclear missiles pointed at each other, ready to launch at a moment's notice. We're clearly not in that situation. But we are very definitely in a technology race. And I would say I've always argued that the best way to avoid a war is to be well prepared for a war, right? And in the Pentagon, we always had a saying, which is we never wanted a fair fight. We wanted to have such overwhelming capability that there wasn't the fight to begin with. And that's that's the status that I think we need to be looking for going into the future.
Okay, like you said, Dr. Lewis, we're not in not yet in a Cold War, but we are in a technology race, a stiff competition. So former Pentagon official Nicolas Chaillon told the Financial Times that he's worried about the growing gap between Washington and Beijing in advanced technologies, especially when we are competing in an age of artificial intelligence. So I quote him here. He said, "We have no competing fighting chance against China in 15 to 20 years. So right now, it's already a done deal," he said. So do you share his concerns, Dr. Lewis?
Absolutely, I do not. I don't share that concern. So, you know, I will bet on American innovation any day. And I'll point to a couple of indicators. So first, let me step back. It is true that in a few key areas, China is making huge investments. Hypersonics is one. Artificial intelligence is another. Biotechnology, directed energy, all areas where we know that China is investing very heavily. The United States is investing as well. The Chinese have some advantages. Dictatorships can move very quickly. They have a top-down direction. So when the top of the government says, we're going to do X, they can put the resources and everyone lines up. In the United States and, you know, in free democracies, we discuss, we debate, we have changes in leadership, and that can slow us down. But let me tell you our big advantages. First, we are still an incredibly innovative society. That's very important. I'll just point to the fact that the best and the brightest from around the world want to study in American universities. Students from China want to come to the United States and study here. Very few American students want to go to mainland China and study there. Those Chinese students come here because they understand our innovation. And by the way, most of those students who come to study in our universities want to stay. They want to remain in the United States because they embrace our openness, our freedoms, and our spirit of innovation. So that's advantage number one. Advantage number two, our friends, our partners, and our allies. So if you look across the board, it's not just the United States. It's countries throughout Asia, throughout Europe that we work with, that we're closely aligned to. And that's a multiplying factor. You know, the United States only has about 5% of the world's population. So we don't have all the best and the smartest people in the world. But when we combine with our friends, with our partners, with our allies, that's a tremendous, tremendous resource. The Chinese don't have that. They don't have a lot of friends, partners, and allies. They have business relationships. They have alliances of convenience, whereas we have true partnerships built on shared values and shared aspirations that I think ultimately mean that we can be successful in this.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Lewis, White House spokesperson said United States welcome the stiff competition with China, but the Biden administration do not want this competition to veer into conflict. I ask this because I want to know, what does all this mean to U.S.-China relation or U.S.-China competition and the growing crisis across the Taiwan Strait, especially when President Biden said that we have this commitment to come to defend once the China attacks Taiwan. What's your opinion about that?
So I would never pretend to be to put words in the White House's mouth. I wouldn't pretend to be a spokesman for the White House. I would say this. You know, it is a reality that China, especially the Chinese Communist Party, is making these investments. We know that they're, again, as I said earlier, they're investing in technologies across the board. My big fear is how they would use those technologies. So, for example, artificial intelligence is an area that we in the United States are investing quite a bit, and we are still ahead of China in this area, although China is investing, as I said, very heavily. Mm-hmm. But one key difference: when we are developing artificial intelligence systems, even for national defense, the ethical use of those systems is always at our forefront. When I was in the Pentagon, we spent a lot of time clearly defining where we would use artificial intelligence and where we would not. Same thing with biotechnology. There are terrible things that you could do if you misuse biotechnology. In the Department of Defense in the United States, we had very, very clear guidelines. We spoke about this often. We thought about this often. Where do we not cross the line? I worry that China doesn't have those same limitations. I worry that they would use artificial intelligence for frankly, evil purposes. We already see the way China monitors its own population using artificial intelligence, creating scores for their population, value scores for their population. This is something that we would never do. This goes against our fundamental values. And so that's my big fear, not just that they're developing the technology, but the way they would misuse their technology. Coming back to hypersonics. So one clear line that we have drawn in the United States is we do not link hypersonics with nuclear weapons. In our view, hypersonics are actually an alternative to nuclear. In fact, I argue hypersonics will actually de-escalate a situation, because some of these hypersonics weapons could be used in the future for applications that they might only be able to solve. You might be tempted to use a nuclear weapon. And so the fact that we have drawn that clear distinction, that we have made it very, very, we have said unequivocally, we are making sure that all of our hypersonic systems will be conventional, is a very important distinction between what we're doing and what the Chinese Communist Party is doing.
I have a follow-up. If China or PLA does use this hypersonic missiles technology into the possible conflict, military conflict with us across the Taiwan Strait, would this give them more of an advantage to win over the conflict of us?
So absolutely. Look, hypersonics, we think, is absolutely critical to future conflicts. And, you know, hypersonic systems, especially hypersonic missiles, they combine speed, maneuverability, and also they fly at altitudes that makes them specifically difficult, particularly difficult to track, target, and stop. Now, it's obvious why China wants these. Hypersonic weapons hold our Navy at risk. Again, the Chinese have bragged that they have missiles that are specifically designed to target the U.S. Navy, our aircraft carriers, for example. It holds our air bases at risk. Can you imagine hypersonic weapons that could damage our airstrips so our Air Force couldn't take off? So it's very obvious why China wants these capabilities. Among my concerns is that this class of weapon is a tactical weapon, but it has strategic implications. So China, by investing in hypersonics, no longer needs to have a world-class air force to fight our air force. They no longer need to have a world-class navy to fight our navy. Instead, they can use these weapons to introduce risk and threat against our world-class systems.
So finally, my last question for you, I think many people want to ask this, what can we do about this to stem and slow down this ongoing arms race with China? Shall we initiate arms control talks or agreements, just like we did in the Cold War era, your opinion?
So I'm just an engineer, but it seems to me that it would be very naive to think that China would trade away an advantage that they have today, because they've got deployed systems and we're still doing development and testing. So right now, I just don't see that as being a practical alternative. I wish it were possible. I would further argue, though, that the United States would develop hypersonic capability, conventional hypersonic capability, regardless of anyone else developing these technologies, because they can be de-escalating. In other words, it allows us to do very precision strike against, you know, very, very localized target to prevent a conflict from getting wider. So it's something that the United States, I think, would be investing in regardless. But at the end of the day, I just think the idea that somehow we're going to come to the negotiating table and bargain away this area of technology against a peer competitor who right now has an advantage, I just don't see that as being a practical alternative. I wish it were.
Okay, thank you so very much, Dr. Lewis, for joining us today. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
好的，以上就是这个星期海峡论坛的节目内容，感谢您的收看。提醒您，来宾发表是个人观点，不代表美国之音。我是樊东宁，祝您平安，我们下次节目再会。关心最新发展，锁定海峡论坛。欢迎收看美国之音的海峡论坛，我是樊东宁。美国参谋长联席会议主席米利将军证实，中国最近进行了一次进入太空轨道的高超音速武器试验，他并以冷战时期的斯普特尼克时刻来形容中共在军事发展上的这项重大突破。在此之前，中国对相关报道予以否认，表示那只是一次对航天器进行的测试。中国拥有高超音速武器系统究竟意味着什么？美国在高超音速武器方面的发展是否已经落后中国？万一美中在台海爆发军事冲突，高超音速导弹能力是不是双方决胜的关键之一呢？海峡论坛今天特别专访一位高超音速武器的专家，前美国国防部负责国防研究与工程的代理副次长，同时也是国防企业协会 NDIA 的新兴技术研究中心 ETI 的执行主任马克·刘易斯博士 Dr. Mark Lewis。
Dr. Lewis, welcome to Voice of America.
Thank you so much for having me.
First of all, the news that China had tested a new nuclear-capable hypersonic missiles was described as a Sputnik moment that surprised the U.S. officials. So how big a deal is this, in your opinion?
So let me start off. If the reports are correct, honestly, it isn't that big a surprise, because we've known that China has invested very heavily in this area. China has made no secret about this. They bragged about their investments in hypersonics. They bragged about the missiles that they're building. You can go on YouTube and see videos of their new weapons as well as their testing facilities. So it really isn't that big a surprise. What I think is important, though, is that this test signals a change in what we perceive as Chinese mm-hmm. intentions. So whereas it's often been said that China is mostly concerned about controlling the geographic area around China, and therefore most of their military developments are aimed in the Indo-Pacific area. Mm-hmm. If these reports are correct, then this weapon is really a global weapon. This is something that can project force anywhere on the planet. And that's a very, very different capability, and I think signals an important change in the Chinese view of military power.
So, Dr. Lewis, you said it should not be a surprise that China is bragging about this capability. But why Beijing was so quick to deny this report, insisting that this is only, in fact, the test of a spacecraft?
So, you know, I will tell you, sometimes it's hard to figure out why the Chinese Communist Party does what they do. They see in hypersonics as in other areas, they will tend to play both sides. On the one mm-hmm. hand, they want to project themselves as pursuing only peaceful technologies. But on the other hand, we see displays of hypersonic weapons at their military parades on display for the whole world to see. I do mm-hmm. think that China has a certain degree of national pride in their work in this area. Mm-hmm. And I would tell you it's well deserved. They've made some significant advancements in this area, from fundamental science to operational systems. But why they would deny specific military capabilities is anyone's guess.
Okay. And also, we are more familiar with the so-called ICBMs. What's the difference, main differences between ICBMs and this kind of hypersonic missiles?
So if I can, let me explain a little bit. Hypersonic refers to anything traveling faster than about 5 times the speed of sound. Mm-hmm. So that's roughly about a mile per second. We have been building hypersonic systems, hypersonic vehicles, since the late 1940s. The very first hypersonic systems were sounding rockets that were launched on the top of captured V-2 rockets right after World War II. But when we refer to hypersonic today, it's really shorthand for hypersonic maneuverable systems. So mm-hmm. this refers to things that fly very fast in the atmosphere and can use mm-hmm. forces in the atmosphere, aerodynamic forces, to control direction, provide extra maneuverability. And that's really the key. So any ICBM will re-enter, fly, you know, launches from a launch platform, flies to high altitude, and then comes back into the atmosphere at hypersonic speeds. But ICBMs traditionally are not very maneuverable. That's mm-hmm. important, because if you watch where an ICBM launches, you watch its initial trajectory, you have a pretty good idea where it's going. You know where it's going to mm-hmm. be landing. Right. These hypersonic systems, because they have the added dimension of maneuverability, can mm-hmm. now be unpredictable. So whereas mm-hmm. they can travel almost as fast as an ICBM, in some cases not quite as fast as an ICBM, but that mm-hmm. maneuverability makes them especially hard to predict what they're doing, what the intentions are, and also makes it a little bit harder to stop.
So finally, my last question for you, I think many people want to ask this, what can we do about this to stem and slow down this ongoing arms race with China? Shall we initiate arms control talks or agreements, just like we did in the Cold War era? Your opinion?
So I'm just an engineer, but it seems to me that it would be very naive to think that China would trade away an advantage that they have today, because they've mm-hmm. got deployed systems and we're still doing development and testing. So right now, I just don't see that as being a practical alternative. I wish it were possible. I would further argue, though, that the United States would develop hypersonic capability, conventional hypersonic capability, regardless of anyone else developing these technologies, because they can be de-escalating. In other words, mm-hmm. it allows us to do very precision strike against, you know, very, very localized target to prevent a conflict from getting wider. So it's something that the United States, I think, would be investing in regardless. But at the end of the day, I just think the idea that somehow we're going to come to the negotiating table and bargain away this area of technology against a peer competitor who right now has an advantage, I just don't see that as being a practical alternative. I wish it were.
Okay, thank you so very much, Dr. Lewis, for joining us today. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
好的，以上就是这个星期海峡论坛的节目内容，感谢您的收看。提醒您，来宾发表是个人观点，不代表美国之音。我是樊东宁，祝您平安，我们下次节目再会。